14th of August?
14th, right.
2000. And we're at 3947 Fulton Avenue.
Seaford, New York, 11783.
And we're having a conversation interview with Jack Keefe, who previously we'd done a number of interviews with as part of an oral history project. We wanted to pick up a little test this way of doing some interviewing using a video and seeing if this would, maybe some of it eventually go on a website. The last time we talked, I think we caught up through political campaigns and we took you almost up to 68.
Right.
But I wondered if you'd like to drop back a little bit and tell any stories about, say, when Jackie was born. Well, we didn't cover anything about the family part of it.
Right, right.
And, like, what type of work you were doing at the time. And the other thing that people have asked me about is how come we ended up being raised here and not in Canada when originally you were thinking of going back to Canada. So I thought some of those stories might be interesting to get. So maybe we should take it from the wedding.
From the wedding? Oh, well,
what was that like for you? What was that like for you?
Well, actually the only one that I knew before we got up there was your mother.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know anybody else. I had met her parents and I had met a few other people, but I had nobody from home at the wedding. It was all your mother's friends and family. And I came back to New York after being up in the Yukon for about a year.
Was the war still on at that time?
Oh yeah, the war was still on. And as a matter of fact, I was home in New York on D-Day when the lads went into France on D-Day.
And so it was very hard to travel even if your relatives didn't want to go up.
You had to get special permission to leave from the draft board and so forth and so on. So I took the train back and we were married, and your mother met me in Edmonton, which was about maybe 200 miles from where her folks lived. And then we went up to Widewater where we were married. And we were married by a Catholic priest.
How did you travel up there?
By train. Uh-huh. Train, and it must have taken us about 7 or 8 hours to go up there. We got there around 11 o'clock at night, and what you did up there, if you're going to stop in a certain area, you told the engineer or the conductor, I want to stop at Widewater, or I want to stop at Little Slave Lake, otherwise they go right through.
Wow.
So we tell them that we will go.
So there's no train station. Was there a train station there?
No. This is really wild. It's on Lesser Slave Lake, which is a lake about 90 by 20 miles. And it's farming area and timber and so forth. And we went up there and her father met us that night, you know. That's when I met the family, and then we were there a few days and we made arrangements to get Father Kinderwater to marry us. And we were married in the cabin, and it was a real big cabin, you know. And Father Kinderwater married us. And I said to him, I said I would see you in church the next morning, Father. He says, you won't see me. I said, why not? He says, because I'm a missionary. And he said, I'll be 75 miles from here tomorrow. He says, I'm scheduled to say mass 75 miles from here. So each week he would go to a different place, you know. And we stayed up there. Was that Thunder?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Close.
All right. So then after we were married, we stayed up there for a couple of weeks before we went down to Edmonton. And we went to a rodeo. But a place called Canuso, which wasn't too far from Whitewater.
Did the whole family go? Or?
Oh, yeah, and we all went. And everybody was talking about what a great horsewoman your mother's mother was, your grandmother.
That was Wildy Davis?
Wildy Davis. They were all talking about how what a fine horsewoman she was. And your mother would tell me that when she was a kid, her mother would jump on the back of the horse and ward around the farmyard and all that sort of stuff. But I had never seen anything, so we're sitting on the rail there, with a fence, you know, up at the rodeo, And I said, well, I hear an awful lot about your ability as a horsewoman, but I haven't seen it. So there's a guy come around bareback, and she looks at her and she says, hey, Pete, let me have that horse. And he hops off the horse and she hops on the back, and she rode around that rodeo like she was part of the horse, you know.
Really? Bareback?
Bareback. You
know. How old a woman would she have been at that time?
She's about 43. I'm thinking, my God, this old woman's really something. So your grandfather isn't to be outdone. He decides that he's going to show me how to ride the wild bull. And he has a couple of beers in him.
How old do you think he was at the time?
He would be about 51 or so. He's 8 years younger than her.
Eight years older.
Huh?
8 years older. You said he was 8 years younger than her.
Oh, I mean 8 years older. Yeah, 8 years old. So anyway, he gets on the back of the wild bull and he comes out, yippity shipping away, and all of a sudden, boom, he's thrown right off the horse, off the bull. And then Freddie rode it. Freddie, of course, was in his 20s. And he rode the bull right.
That mom's brother, Fred.
Yeah.
He would have been in his 20s.
Yeah. And then, of course, we went up to Edmonton, stayed there with a couple of days and cousins. Then we took the Canada cross country. And we ended up in Montreal. And then we came down through Vermont,
and
New York, and so forth. And, okay.
Oh, let me go check that bathroom. So we were saying about the trip that you came down from Canada.
Yeah, by way of Montreal, and we came through Vermont. And your mother couldn't get over how pretty it was, how beautiful it was. And this coming from Alberta, you know, we're around Banff and Lake Louise, which is pretty beautiful too. She thought the state was just great. So we got into the Grand Central Station. And we grabbed the cab up to Penn Station, and the way up, I'm pointing out the Empire State Building and a few other items. And she looks at him, and I said, well, what do you think of it? Oh, she said, well, I've seen them all in the movies. And then we got back to St. Albans, and the folk met us, and we went into the house, you know, and it was one of the hottest August nights in a long, long time. And it's very hot, and it's very humid. And she doesn't have much to say. And my brother Georgie, who was 18, he's getting ready to go into the army, which he eventually ended up with the 3rd Infantry Division in Europe. He came in and he was listening to him and so forth. And he told us later on he went back to the stationery store in St. Albans where they had sodas and so forth. And the kids were saying to him, well, now, what is she like? And he says, I don't know, she doesn't talk. She was very quiet. And then, of course, we settled in, and she got a job for a couple of months over at Look Magazine in the accounting department. And I went to the Singer Sewing Machine Company as assistant chief clerk at their office on 8th Avenue and 50th Street. And then we rented an apartment just a couple of blocks from where my folks lived in St. Albans. On 116th Avenue, and we lived just a couple of blocks from my folks. So we were able to get into the community and to see them. You know, that was pretty good. She was close to my mother, so that helped a lot.
But originally, were you thinking of just staying here a short point and going
back
to Canada?
We thought of staying here for a short time, but then it didn't materialize. So we both then ended up in New York, and that's back in 1945, and we're still here.
Was there some story about you were starting to go back up on the train and you had trouble with something?
Oh, well, we were going to go up back to Alaska. And I had spoken to them a couple of days before, and I said to them, now, what do we need?
These are the U.S. officials?
Yeah, well, no, the employee, the personnel people, you know.
The employers.
Yeah, and they said, you need this, that, and I had all my papers in order. And we got there, and they said, you need your draft exemption. I said, wait a second, why didn't you tell me that the other day? Well, we said it was just an oversight. Well, it was too much of an oversight, I'm not going. So it quits, never ended up in Alaska. The next time we got back there was about 10 years ago.
So the both of you were going to work in Alaska for a while?
Yeah, we were going to work in Alaska.
Wow. So how do you think Mom found sort of relating to here? When you were at the wedding, it was all of her friends,
all her friends,
none of yours.
Not a one.
And then when you came down here,
to all my friends and then the Huz. But she adjusted well because, you know, she got friendly with the people in St. Albans. Then when we moved to Freeport, she was friendly with everybody there. And Seaford, of course, she knows everybody in Seaford, a lot more people than I know.
What was the, for you, when you first moved in, what was that like? Moving into another house in your neighborhood?
You mean, just a change. I have been used to, after all, I had spent the three prior years living in barracks and so forth. So all that you had in the barracks was you just have a bed and a place to put your gear, and that was about it. You had no showers. Showers were all in other buildings. You had the lavatories and so forth. You had to go out into the cold at night, especially in the Yukon, you know. It was about 50 or 60 feet from the barracks, the Johns, the lavatories.
So for you, you were moved into a top part of a house?
Yeah, we were on the second floor.
Second floor of a house, but you had indoor water and your shower and all that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is back in civilization.
Right.
When you're living in the jungles of South America, in Trinidad and British Guiana, it's not very fancy. And then, of course, you get up to the Yukon, you had the real cold to contend with. And we have maybe about 30 guys in a barracks. And all that we had there was hot water in the morning, which we got out of a barrel, and so we could shave. But if you wanted to shower, you had to go down to another building during the course of the day. But that wasn't so bad because I never ate lunch. So during my lunch period, I would go over and shave, and I would go over and shower and so forth. So it was good.
How'd you do exercise up there?
I used to do a little chinning near my bed, but not too much because we didn't have the facilities, you know. At least in South America, we could do some swimming now and then when I was in Trinidad, but not in the other places because in Brazil, there were no pools. I was right at the mouth of the Amazon, and it wasn't clean. You didn't want to swim in that.
And also, there's some piranha in there, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, they might have been. I don't know. I never even chanced it. But in British Guiana, they didn't have any pools, and it was right at the end of the river, and the river was dirty, real dirty.
Did you do push-ups and hand walking at all? Or?
I do push-ups. I walk on my hands, and I do a lot of chin-ups, you know. But that was about it.
So when you started as singer, and she worked at Look Magazine, and that was when she became pregnant with Jack?
Yeah, right.
And what do you remember about the birth of Jackie?
Well, I just remembered, you know, we took her that night to the hospital, and we didn't know whether or not she was going to give birth that night. So I called the office the next day, and I said I wouldn't be in, and they said, fine, okay. And then I guess she was in there a couple of days before she gave birth to Jackie. And I remember calling out the next day the office. They said, well, what is it, a boy or a girl? I said, neither. She hasn't given birth yet. You know, that was it.
So then you started going back to work? Or
well, I think when I went back the next day, she had already given birth to the baby. As a matter of fact, I called about 6 o'clock that night, I think, and I asked how she was doing. They said she just went into the delivery room, you know, and then we went over to the hospital. She had the baby.
Was it a big excitement? Because that was the first, was that the first grandchild?
That was the first grandchild, sure. Yeah. Big deal. It wasn't the first grandchild for her parents because her brother, his wife had two children.
Fred and Reva?
Yeah, she had two children, that's right, by that time, because young Freddie was older than Jackie.
Was it a big event for the christening then in those days? Or?
Not particularly, no. No, we didn't have any, just maybe a little gathering in the family, but we didn't have any big party or anything like that.
So it was right in the local church?
Oh, yeah.
St.
Catherine of Siena in St. Albans. Father Feeney was the one who got the ice baby.
And then, did Mom, by the time then, she had stopped working?
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure. She stopped working a couple of months before the baby was born.
And then it was 2 years later that your second child was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember that event?
I remember that. I was in Brooklyn. I was taken off an order at 497 Fulton Street, right across Erasmus Hall High School. And I would call every now and then to find out, you know, how she was doing. And
what were you doing there? Were you still a singer?
I was still a singer. I was taken off an order in the shop.
Uh-huh.
And I remember there was one guy in there. He'd come in every morning. They were a good group of people, the workers there. And he'd come in, he'd say, well, another day closer to eternity. So then, of course, when you were born, it was the same thing. You know, it's always a special occasion. And I remember you seemed to be all arms and legs. You know, you were a big kid.
And then it wasn't too much long after that that you moved to Freeport.
Yeah, we moved to, you were born in 47, and we moved to Freeport in July of 48. And we lived there in July of 48 until March of 51 when we moved to Seaford. So we'll be in Seaford 50 years next spring.
What made you move from St. Albans to Freeport?
Well, we wanted a place of our own. And when we moved to Freeport, we got just a little cabin, you know, but it had lots of land. It was about 150 feet by 60 feet or something like that. It had a garage, and we just had the one big bedroom upstairs, and downstairs we had the bathroom and the living room and the kitchen. But the thing was, we had our own place. We were away from people, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we wanted a bigger place. So then we moved to Seaford. We bought a home, which we paid $12,500 for, and that's going for about $12,500, and that's going for $250,000 today. And we were able to get, I think we paid $250 extra to get an extra bit of land. The usual lot was 60 by 100 in the neighborhood, and we got 100 by 100. We got 10,000 square feet.
For an extra $250.
That was, it was a nice backyard.
Sure.
And all that sort of stuff.
It was in Freeport that you first met the Millers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the McDonald's.
That's right.
How did you first meet the McDonald's? Do you remember that?
Well, I think we were introduced to them by Gus Hogan, who was our landlord, and he was a gem. He was a great guy. Mrs. Hogan was wonderful. We got along with them great. And the McDonald's lived on one side, and the Millers lived on another, and they just introduced us, and we sent right into the neighborhood. But it was a good move because we were getting out of Nassau County, where all the new buildings were going up, you know, and you could look at the various neighborhoods and see where you wanted to move. And we saw this deal in Seaford, and we thought it was a good deal, and we moved there.
What was the commute like for you? Because when you were in...
Not bad. I never lived in an area where I had to take a bus to the main area of transportation. When we lived in Bath Beach, we took the elevator into Manhattan. It was maybe a 10-minute walk.
That was when you were growing up.
This was when we were growing up until I was 13 years of age. When we lived in Seaford, we could walk maybe a half mile.
You mean St. Albans?
We lived in Seaford, St. Albans. We could go for about a half mile to the Long Island Railroad. When we moved to Freeport, we could walk to the Baldwin area. When we moved to
How far was that?
Another half hour or so. Mm-hmm. And then when we moved to Seaford, we would walk to the Wantagh Station until we moved here. And boy, you can't beat this for accountability.
In the morning when you would go to the station?
A half mile.
Half mile.
Yeah.
Half mile. Oh, okay.
So it was, I never, like some people here on the island, they live in Levittown or they live in Plainview, they have to take their car to get to the Long Island Railroad if they're going into the city.
Right.
I've always been able to walk to get to the city or, you know, to get to the transportation area. At the Seaford station is 2 blocks away from me.
When you were working at Singer, were you always at the same place?
Oh no! I was an auditor, so I would have to travel around from shop to shop to take off the orders, and the furthest I would go was Riverhead or Southampton, and I'd stay overnight there, you know.
And, I'd go and you out. Take the train out?
Yeah, I'd go out on a Monday and come back on a Friday. Mm-hmm. Or when I worked in Huntington, I would take the train and I'd be home every night.
Mm-hmm. And that was, they covered those expenses?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it was like, what, it was like an hour and a half train ride or to Huntington? Because you had to make connections.
Yeah, what I had to do, actually, was go into Jamaica from Freeport, go into Jamaica and then to go out in Jamaica, you know.
Right.
It was a long haul, but at least you're home every night.
So during that time, just after we moved into, was Tim born in Seaford or when we were still in Freeport?
He was born in Freeport.
Just before we moved?
Yeah. Well, no, he was born in 49, and we moved in 51, so he was two.
What do you remember of his birth?
Oh, that was hectic. He was in, your mother was in and out of the hospital about four times before she gave birth to him. And then I remember I called Steve Daly, who was our general practitioner, and I told him what was transpiring. And he said, well, I'll tell you something. If what you said is happening, medical history is being made. He said, I'll be right over. Hey, come in, and he examined your mother. He says, listen, medical history is being made. Get to the hospital as soon as possible. So Eddie Parris was driving us in. We had to go to Jamaica. And we drove in, and we just got there, and she had the baby.
Yeah. Oh, was this the one that was a snowstorm or something going on?
Well, there was a snowstorm a week before that, and I had to shovel out everything to make sure we get out. But by that time, the weather had changed a bit, and it wasn't too bad. But it was a very foggy day and wet and damp, you know.
And by that time, did you have the first car? When did you get the first car?
Eddie picked us up. Eddie picked us up.
So we didn't get the first family car until you were in Seaford for a while.
No, we were still in Freeport when we got it.
Oh, you got a car in Freeport?
Yeah, Freeport.
What type of car was it?
A Chev, a 1939 Chevrolet.
Did it have those running boards on the side?
I don't remember. Yes. It was a two-door affair.
Standard shift?
Yeah, definite.
Had you driven before?
No. I that was when I started to learn how to drive. I ended up driving up 50,000 miles a year when I was working, you know.
How did you learn how to drive?
Well, actually, your mother taught me.
Really?
Yeah.
Because she had driven the tractors and cars on the farm?
Well, no, she learned how to drive down here, too.
Who taught her?
I don't think she ever drove I don't think she ever drove a tractor, because by the time, I don't think they even had tractor. They had horse-driven when she was a kid growing up. See, she left the farm at 11 years of age, and they might have had tractors, so she would have been too young at that age to actually drive a tractor, you know. But she did a lot of horseback riding. She loved to ride horseback.
So did she take, you know, professional lessons, do you think, or is she just one of the neighbors taught her?
Well, yeah, John McDonald taught her.
Ah.
Yeah.
And then she taught you?
Yeah, right. Oh.
What was that experience like?
Well, I don't really remember, you know, it was just do the best you could, and that'd be about it.
What was it like? But you must have had to adjust some with your leg.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was a nuisance, but I just did the best I could.
How did you do? You'd use both you'd use your left leg for the clutch?
Yeah, and the brake, you know.
And would you use your hand to move your leg? Or?
Yeah, pretty much use my hand.
On your knee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But then, of course, when we got the 56, no, we got a 1940 Oldsmobile, and that was automatic. So then I could just use the one leg. And then, of course, since then, I've always driven automatic cars.
I see.
I never went back to the old way of driving, the shift and all that stuff.
But I mean, with just having to use your leg as a lever and then try to shift, you must have had to be really quick.
Yeah.
So then we're in Seaford, and we moved in 51 in there?
We moved there in 51 I'm not sure whether we moved in on Tim's birthday or we signed the papers on Tim's birthday. But we moved in March, around 21st of 1951, and Beth was born in the north the next week in the hospital in Freeport. She was born on April 2nd.
Hmm. So you had to go back to Freeport to have...
Yeah, but it was just a short distance. It, yeah. You know, it was, well, 6 miles or so.
Sure.
Yeah.
So by that time, you're in. But didn't Mom, didn't Papa and Nana, Mom's father and mother, come down around that time, too?
Yeah, they came down, let's see, they came down when Beth was born. Yeah, they were there.
And he had been a cabinet maker and a carpenter.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, he started in life. He was an apprentice cabinet maker. As a matter of fact, we have that cabinet out there, which he made when he was about 14 years of age. And it was all made with hand tools, none of electric tools or anything like that. And, of course, he had been a farmer. He farmed for years up in, I forget the name of the town now, near Clyde in Alberta. And most of the family farmed up there, the brothers and sisters and brothers-in-law and all that sort of stuff. In Clyde, everybody knew everyone else. Oh, yeah, they came from Hereford Lakes. They were on the Athabasca Trail. And I, when she would tell me about the Athabasca Trail, I'd think, geez, a big, wide trail. It's a little 2x4 dirt road. It goes from Alberta up to Athabasca.
Wow.
And one of your aunts was down here, or your granddad's. And Aunt Ella, and she was a youngster she was very blonde. She was German extraction, and her father was a drover, and he used to transport material from Edmond up to Athabasca along the Athabasca Trail. And this was back in the 1900s, and she'd be one of the drivers when she was a kid, about 12 to 14. And I said to her, Aunt Ella, where'd you sleep nights? Oh, she said, we just slept under the wagons. And they got up to Athabasca, and they were just Indians up there. They had never seen a white woman before. And she was very blonde, and they would rub her hair for luck. Oh. So she came down to New York when she was in her 90s, and it was her first plane trip. And I said, what was you like? She said, well, I was a little concerned when we got up in the air. But then I saw one man having a smoke, and another guy reading a magazine, another one having a drink. I figured, well, this can't so bad. I really enjoyed it. And she was great for crafts, arts and crafts. And we took her over to New York, one of these arts and crafts affairs. And they had a lot of blankets up there, plaid blankets and something, and they put together. And she was elated. She saw some of the stuff, and she didn't think it'd measure up to hers. And it cost $1,000. Well, I guess I'm not doing so bad after all.
When
Aunt Ella.
Aunt Ella. That was Nana's sister or Papa's sister?
Huh?
What was the relationship between the
Aunt Dayton? Ella?
Yeah. And
she was married to, let's see, how was she married? Oh, yeah. She was married to a brother of your grandfather. She was married to a Davis.
Okay.
Simpson Davis.
I see.
Yeah, and she had two children, Roy Davis, who was very, very affable, and he was sort of he'd always keep you in touch. Whenever anything went up in Canada, he'd call you up or drop a note. And Pearl Nelson, she has about 5 kids. She still lives up there.
And when Nan and Papa Davis came down that fall,
right.
Was that the first time for them on a plane?
They didn't come by plane. They came by bus.
Greyhound bus?
Yeah, they came by bus.
So that was a multi-day journey for
them.
Yeah,
but they had lots of time, you know, and the bus travel is not too bad. You know, they have you have the John right on the bus.
And right.
And you make stops every now and then. You
pick up food. And
pick up food, or they give you a couple of hours, you can go and have a bite and all that.
So they came down, and then did he work on some on the house?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he helped put up the rooms up on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, later on, before we moved from there, we had a dormer put on the back. So actually, we had 2 big rooms up there, about 18 by 14 or something like that. Also a big bathroom with the double sinks in it and so forth. So we had the 2 bathrooms, and we had the shower, the basement, and we had the big backyard, and we had the garage.
What do you remember of Elizabeth's birth?
Well, it's just that it was a beautiful day, a beautiful spring day, and it was pretty much normal in every respect, you know.
So compared to Tim's, it wasn't back and forth.
Oh, no, it was peaceful.
Were you surprised to have the first girl?
Yeah, we were elated. We would hope, see, I had four brothers, and we were hoping the first child would be a girl, and then the second child was a boy, and I, the third child, your mother had a lot of trouble with Tim, and my mother said, oh my goodness, all that trouble just for another boy. So my mother never lived.
Oh, she woodlanded a granddaughter.
Yeah, she died before, she died in January, and Beth was born in April, so she never got to see her granddaughter.
Is that one of the reasons you named her Elizabeth?
Beg pardon?
Is that one of the reasons you named her Elizabeth?
Yeah, Elizabeth Catherine, after my mother.
So that she was the first grandchild, female grandchild, too, for everybody.
The first what?
First girl baby.
No, no. The first girl baby was...
Oh, Francis, right?
What's his name? Fred's oldest daughter. She died at about 1 year of age.
But that's on Mom's side. But
yeah.
How about on your side?
Oh, it's our side. It was, yeah, she's the first granddaughter.
So Frank hadn't gotten married yet or hadn't had children?
He had children, yeah. He had a couple of children right after me. But I don't think he had a daughter before. Okay. He might have. I don't really remember.
Right. And then within a year later, Donna came along, right?
Yeah, she was
full
born
year
in 52, in August of 52.
So it was like a year and a half.
Yeah.
May, June, July, yeah, almost a year and a half.
Yeah.
What do you remember of her birth?
Well, nothing, just normal, you know. I don't really remember that much. I don't remember. I wasn't home when George was born, and I was in Albany and Troy, New York. And then... let's see, when Maura, I really don't remember not much of her birth either. But I remember Michael's very well. I was working in Baltimore, but I was home at the time. So I remember his, and I don't recall too much about Mark's.
I remember Maura's because she was 7777.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, 7757.
57, right. And the seventh child.
Yeah, that's right.
Most of the children, the early children, when they were starting to go through schooling, they went to St. William the Abbot.
That's right.
And they were just building the school there at the time.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pause. Is it getting Elizabeth's birth? You were saying that at the time that she was being born, Dad was actually... outside
the hospital.
The same hospital, taking his driver's test.
Right.
When Jack was born, and you were the first, we were talking about the wedding, and how when Dad, because of the war, when he got married up there, it was really all your friends, and none of his that were there. And then when you came down here, it was all of his friends and none of yours. And I wondered what that was like for
rough.
Adjusting for you.
Rough, very rough. Very rough.
Was it you were used to being, you know, going to regular parties with your friends and, or just to dances together or?
Oh, yeah. But I also had a big family that were, what shall I say? That we were all very close. Both sides of the family, it was hard to tell which was my mother's side of the family and my father's side.
And your mother was Wilde.
Right.
And your father was Davis.
Stanley.
No, but I mean, what was the Davis side of the family was your father's.
Right.
And your mother's side of the family was?
Williams. And her stepfather's name, who was the only grandfather I ever knew, was Gaughan, James Gaughan. G-A-U-G-H-N, I think, Gaughan. I'd have to write it down.
When you first came down, did you think you were going back up there to work?
Yes, when we first came down, that we came really down on our honeymoon. We were going back to Alaska to work, mm-hmm. and we didn't do that.
What was it like going to work in, was it Look magazine? Mm-hmm. What was it like working there?
Very interesting. The people were very, very nice, and I was assistant to the head accountant and worked in the files in that work.
I do remember one story when we were growing up that there was some boss there that was
Marvin Watmore was the head of it.
And supposedly he gave everybody a hard time?
No, he was a very, very nice man. Uh-huh. He heard that I was getting sick on the trains in the morning coming in, mm-hmm. and that in the afternoons I was having a rough time. And my immediate boss, Gretchen, what was her last name, I remember, told him that I was expecting. And so he called me into his office, and I didn't know what he was going to tell me. And he said that Gretchen had told him that I was expecting, and that I was having problems with morning sickness and in the afternoon. And he told me not to hesitate, to go in and lay down and have a rest if I felt like it. And also said I probably was thinking about leaving, but don't think about leaving, that I'd be better as time went on, I'd get over the morning sickness. Told me to have crackers and tea, soda crackers and tea, before I got out of bed in the morning. And also said that he would appreciate it, I'd stay as long as possible. And I stayed until after Christmas. And at the Christmas party, gave me a bonus of $50.
Wow.
So, which was...
Sure, a lot.
More than I was getting a week,
But wasn't there some situation, there was somebody there that people, or maybe it was another place you worked, people would take a lot of guff from somebody and finally you stood up to
That was in Whitehorse. That was in the office in Whitehorse. Remember, they weren't giving me my salary.
Oh, yeah.
Leo Taylor was the USED. And... they weren't giving me the salary I was promised. And he was very vicious. And so I got on my high horse, and I guess both the filing office and bookkeeping office, the payroll office, because we were only one big room, could hear me because my voice carried. And I told them what I thought of him. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I was very firm. Didn't do much good. I never did get my back pay the whole year I was up there. They owed me about $300 or $400 when I left. So turn it off, please.
Time for lunch? Without the external microphone in, and we're going to see if the sound is picking you up all right. If you could just say who you are. And
what my name today, is?
Yeah.
My name is Wanda.
The top. So, could you tell us your name and your date of birth?
The name is Wanda Keith. I'm born on September 2nd, 1921.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about your family. And I showed you the list of things I'd like to cover. I know we're not going to cover it all today. And I know that we probably won't cover it exactly in this order. But I just wanted to have a sense, because that's what seemed to work good with Dad. We went through a number of different things. And then I was able to take, sort of knowing what the audience was, put together a package of the different things we had talked about. And I think it's... if it's okay with you, since Dad is here, if he wants to add something, that might, you know, spark each of our brains and memories to say different things. But I wondered if you'd start talking first about your early life. You once told me that I think when you were 3 is the earliest memory you have.
Yes, I remember being 3. I remember my 4th birthday very vividly. And we were living at that time in Gibbons, Alberta. I had been born in Halfway Lake, Alberta. And my father decided to go down to Gibbons and work on different farmers' places. And we lived in a small, very small building. It was in the spring. What else do I remember about it? I remember my birthday was in September, and we were there at that place all summer.
Were you farming on the land then?
No, he was doing work for other farmers around. He was like plowing their fields in the spring and then helping to put the crops in. He was really working as a hired hand on the different farms. And we lived on this one farmer's place, and there was 3 of us. I had my older sister, Dee Dee, and my brother, and myself, were the children at that time.
And Dee Dee, what was her formal name?
Wildy.
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 That was your mother's name, too.
My mother's name as well, right. And what I remember vividly about a couple of episodes, but I know my mother and father left me with a neighbor one day. Well, they went to Edmonton, which was about 25 miles away. And I was very unhappy because they had left me. And I remember crying for my mother and father. And this woman, her name, I can still see her name, was Mrs. Fraser, and she was big and heavy. And she had me on her lap, trying to rock me and comfort me, and I felt like I was smothering because she had buried my face in her chest. And finally, you know, she got me quieted down, and then she left me alone in this room, and I started looking around at things. I mean, this is coming back to me. I haven't thought of this in years. And I got into her powder, and I powdered everything for that, and I was coughing and sneezing, and she found me doing that. As the day went by, I got involved with doing other things. I had brought some toys along, and then they weren't watching me very close. And the next thing I remember now is I was walking down this road. I guess I was going to try and find my way home. And the sun came on horseback and found me and took me back.
On the horse?
On horseback, right. And then my mother and father came home, and I figured I was really going to get in trouble, you know, because I hadn't been very good all day. And another remembrance very vividly was my 4th birthday.
And so this was before your 4th birthday?
Yes, yeah. This was in the springtime, yeah, you know, and my birthday was in September. And my mother allowed us to go out with our tables and chairs. We had little tables and chairs, and she allowed us to have a picnic out in the field. But we weren't satisfied on staying on the one side of the fence where we were supposed to stay. And I remember Dee Dee holding the barbed wire up and Freddie and I getting the table under the barbed wire. And then we went back to the house and we came back again, and I guess with whatever we were going to have, lemonade or something, with the cake, and we had that there. But we were not supposed to be in that field.
How old was Dee Dee? She's like
Dee Dee was
old.
3 years old, 3.5 years older than me. So,
and
you know,
Fred
she
was older than him, right?
No,
Fred was between.
Fred was 2 years older than me.
She was 7 years of age, Dee Dee.
Yeah. And she, of course, was always in charge.
Right.
You know. Even to this day, oh, you better get that out.
So, there was a bull in the field, and that was why my mother didn't want us in that field. All of a sudden, Freddie started screaming, looked up, you know, and he saw the bull coming across the field. And I just remember us rolling under the fence.
Just in time.
Just in time. And I don't know what happened with the tables and chairs or anything. My mother probably came out and rescued us, you know. But the things you do, and the thing, that's why I think I remember that fourth birthday so vividly.
Because it was a significant event.
Right, right.
You maybe talked about it again later?
Oh, I'm sure we did. I'm sure we did. But it brings back a lot of memories of those years. Then we moved to what they called a manse. It was half of a house that was used. Half was used as a church, and the other half was the living quarters for the pastor and his family. But we rented that half.
Because there wasn't a pastor living there.
Right. So the other half was used on Sunday for church and Sunday school.
So you were close to church.
And I went to Sunday school there. And I had my fifth birthday there. Remember that. So
that was your first, when you were in that town then? Was it a town?
Yeah, and that's where Gwen was born. When I was five, Gwen was born in Givens.
And you started school there then?
No, we started school, we went back to Halfway Lake, and I started school at Gullion School in Halfway Lake.
When you were
I was six, on my sixth birthday.
Was that a one-room schoolhouse?
Yes, yes.
So how many classes do you think were covered in
it? There was 13 children, and it was from grade 1 to grade 8.
And it was all in the same room?
All in the same room. The teacher, as a matter of fact, the teacher boarded with us.
So you lived with the teacher,
yeah,
too?
Yeah.
Did they recite their lessons out loud, or?
Sometimes, yeah. And you had to read in front of the class, you know, the class. And she would have different rows set up. And I think it was just my cousin and I in the first grade that year. Maybe there was another one. But I know I always got kidded for years about, yeah, you stood first in your class because you were the only one in your class. So, see, the problem with this is it brings back too many memories.
That's good. But
it's so good, but it's like well, on and on.
That's not a problem for me. Your father, you said he did a number of different jobs, and during that time, back to Givens,
back to Halfway Lake, right.
Did you have your own farm then in Halfway Lake?
Well, we had our own farm all the time. My father had homesteaded that farm with his mother and father.
Mm.
And then an aunt, one of my father's brothers died, and he had a farm several miles from us. And his wife and two children were there. But my uncle died. And my grandfather had died the year before I was there. So my grandmother asked she wasn't happy where she was. My aunt wasn't happy where she was. So my grandmother told him to bring the two children and come and live with her. And then my uncle, who had another farm in the neighborhood, a brother was just a couple of years older than my father. His wife and his youngest son, Wally, died that next year. So then he came to live with my grandmother and my aunt. So we were all in, not the same house, we were in different houses, but in the same yard.
I know.
And my father and my uncle didn't always agree on things, you know. So my father decided, you know, he'd leave the farm to them to do what they wanted, and he went out on his own. I took my mother and us kids with him. But he decided to come back to the homestead. In the meantime, my uncle got, how can I explain it? He became a manager of a farm over in Clyde. The people who owned the department store, small department store in Clyde, owned this farm. And they hired my uncle to run it. And my aunt, Ella, and her two children went, and Granny went, they all went to Clyde then to live. And then we were on the farm in Halfway Lake, and then on.
So how long did you stay until you went to Edmonton?
Yeah, I was 11 when we moved to Edmonton.
So was June born in Halfway
June
Lake?
June was born at Halfway Lake.
She was how many years younger than you?
10.
10? Wow.
Yeah.
So you were 11, she was 1 when
yeah,
you went
when
to
we
Edmonton.
Went to Edmonton, right.
Hmm. And that was the full family then?
Yes.
So there was four of you.
Five.
I'm thinking, forgetting Gwen.
Yeah.
Gwen came in there.
In Gibbons. She was born in Gibbons.
So how much younger than you was Gwen?
Five years.
Oh, so it was like five in between you and Duke. So when they first went to Edmonton, that was their first school. For Gwen, she never went to school in Halfway Lake.
No, she didn't. Except years later, she did.
When they went back there again?
When they went back and lived back there, when I was about 17, I guess, before I was 18.
Oh, and that's when you stayed in Edmonton to stay with Dee Dee to finish high school?
Right. No, I didn't stay with Dee Dee.
To finish high school, what did you do? How did you do?
Or
was Gwen coming
live
with you?
Gwen came to live with me later. My last year in high school, they moved out in April to the farm because my father had broken his back, his pelvis bone, and he couldn't work. So they went out to the farm again and took cattle and all of that. And then they were out there for about 4 years, I guess. And I stayed, actually, the house we were renting in Edmonton. We never owned a house in Edmonton. We always rented when I was growing up. And the house we were renting, friends of ours, rented the house when we left, or when my parents left, and I stayed and rented a room from them because they were real good friends, you know, too. So I finished up high school there. And then as soon as I was out of school, I went out there for the summer to be with my family.
So then it wasn't long before, after the summer, then you went to work?
I went to work for a farmer's wife, he did threshing crew. He had a threshing crew that he went from farm to farm in the fall.
And that means threshing.
And I stayed with her.
It meant cutting down the wheat?
Cutting it and
separating the wheat
from
it.
Right. Now they have one machine to do it, but then they had the binder and they what was the first thing? Anyway, they cut it down and bound it up into sheaves. And then they stacked it and everything, and then they came through with the threshing machine and took it over. Then they used teams of horses on like a big hay rack, and they would pick all the sheaves of wheat or barley or oats, whatever it was, and take it over to the machine and put it into the threshing machine, which separated the straw from the grain. And they'd do that, you know, for each farmer and go around with their crews and do that for all the farmers. So when they were back on the weekends, or the crew were back to the farm before they'd go to another one, we had to do all the cooking for them.
Oh.
So, and while they were away, I worked for this young couple who I'd known. They had five kids. The oldest was five and the youngest was a baby. I guess he was about 8 weeks old when I first got there. And we had to, Anna and I had to feed the pigs and clean the barns and milk the cows and do all that while the men were, you know, away.
And take care of five kids.
And take care of the kids.
And then when
and
they
I
came in
I worked there for about a month and a half or 2 months. And then I went back to Edmonton. I worked there long enough to get the pay and about material. I made myself a winter coat and a couple of outfits before I went back to Edmonton to look for a job.
Because you knew the type of clothing you'd need to have a job there.
Yeah. Well, I knew what I liked too, you know.
Right.
So, and then when I first went into Edmonton, I did different types of jobs. And then I ended up doing housework for people again, and I worked for the head chef at the McDonald Hotel, which is one of the biggest hotels, you know, in Edmonton. And I worked for he and his wife. They had twins, a boy and a girl, and they were so cute. And I guess I worked there for about 2 months, then I went someplace else. And then my sister was working, Dee Dee, was working down in Hardisty. And there was a program came on For, yeah, anybody, it's like a homemaker's type, mm-hmm. and you learned how to can goods, and you learned how to sew, and you did all different types of things, whatever you wanted to take, and it was, I think it lasted 3 or 4 weeks, so she wanted me to come down there and stay and do that, and that's what I did, and I went through that. Made a lot of friends, and then I went back up to Edmonton and worked there again. Then my
How
parents...
old were you when you went to Hardesty?
Oh, gosh. I was still 19, I guess. It was probably in the spring.
So then, you're back in Edmonton and you're working, but what type, you did homemaking jobs, but somehow you became involved in finances.
Well, that came after, right?
Personnel and...
Well, what? I came back to Edmonton then, my mother and father came back from out of Taylor Lake, where they were living. And I got a job then at the hospital. My mother had had surgery, and she had a hospital bill. In those days, you know, it was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough to pay all the bills and everything. I think people think it's rough now. Well, it was really rough then, too. And so they gave me a job, and I was paid $60 a month, and I also had a room there if I wanted to stay, and I ate there. So it was like room and board. But I had to pay $20 on my mother's hospital bill, $20 for my room and board, and I got $20. And I worked there for, I guess, about a year and a half. And then my father knew the head of the bank that was in Clyde when we had lived out at Halfway Lake in the town of Clyde. And my father took me over to meet him, and he recommended me for a job in the Treasury Department, which was a bank. They had a bank on the south side, and I got the job there. And I worked there until I heard about the job in when the war had started.
What were the type of things you were doing there?
I was not a teller. I was a bookkeeper, and mm-hmm. I handled everything by hand, and we had ledgers, and we had all the towns around, and we did everything by mail. They'd mail their money in, we'd mail their receipts back to them, and do all that. So
you learned the business, because you had to follow the whole process.
Oh, yeah. And then, as I said, from there I went to...
Did somebody tell you about that other job, or are you just looking?
I remember hearing, you know, I knew the Americans were, you know, setting up different jobs. And I don't remember exactly how, but I went and applied for it, and I got it.
And this was to work with the Americans who were building the Trans-Canadian Highway?
Right. And I was in the office in Edmonton a couple of months, and then they asked me if I would go to Whitehorse.
The reason for the highway, was it so that there'd be a direct route across to get...
To Alaska, across
Canada,
and also
in case the war got heavier.
It was closer to Russia and everything,
right.
Across the straits.
So if they needed to, they could start shipping supplies across that way.
Not only that, in the water around, there were submarines, you know.
Right.
So and they also... I don't know, was it then that they were starting to bring the oil down from there too, were they? Or was that later?
I think that came later.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was sort of in the air that there was big projects going on.
Yeah.
What year was this about?
43,
I went up there.
Yeah. And so you were actually Canadian citizens they were hiring to work, but the managers were the Americans? Because it was American money?
No, it was... Metcalf Hamilton Kansas City Bridge Company was the construction company.
Okay. Okay.
But they worked under the USED, the United States Engineer Department. And we were with Medcap Hamilton, Kansas City Bridge.
Dad, maybe I could just cut in here. When you were working for them, were you working for the engineering department or for the construction company?
I was working for the construction company, the same as her, MHKCB.
Okay. Do either one of you want to talk about that first day when you first saw each other? Maybe we should talk just a little bit more what you were doing. How long were you up there before this gentleman came and joined?
I went up in April and he didn't come until October.
So you knew quite a bit about the place and you knew the whole payroll and everything. What type of things were you doing there?
I was in charge of the files for the payroll department, and I was in charge of like the personnel files really for the payroll department, and I also ran the Canadian payroll, and there were about 500 employees on the Canadian payroll, and I didn't even have an adding machine then. I did everything by hand.